Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second ever episode of the Deceptively Athletic Podcast. I am Tony Romanello, and with me today is Mark Jakowski. What's up, Mark? Woo-hoo! Also with me is Marshall Hartman. Marshall, what's up?
Hey, I want to sound this time, so hopefully the audio will be better. It would make that much noise in the first episode, but hey, to all our listeners out there, all 600 of you guys, I'm sorry about that.
600,000, yeah.
and finally, we got Greg Stefanik. What's up, Greg?
Yo.
All right, so we got some big news today, right? A couple hours before we started recording this. Blake Griffin was traded to the Detroit Pistons. And the details of the trade, Detroit is getting Blake Griffin, Bryce Johnson, and Willie Reed. And the Clippers are getting Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, a first-round pick that is protected 1 through 4 from in 2018, 2019, and 2020, and then is unprotected in 2021 if it doesn't convey, and a second-round pick. So what did you guys think of this when the news broke today?
I thought it was a pretty good deal for the Clippers. Like, obviously, you're not going to get a top 20 player in return for Blake. But as far as, like, getting two pieces, a pick that's probably going to be, what, 12 through 15 this year?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of return,
it's definitely going to convey.
Yeah.
It's going to convey this year.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's definitely a nice return for Blake. I mean, it kicks the shit out of what the Kings got back from Boogie, who's probably a better player. And, I mean, if you believe in Teodosic and what Lou Williams is doing, like, Blake's kind of surplus value because you don't really need him creating out the post that much.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing to consider is Blake's long contract where he's going to be getting paid a lot, especially later on. And he's always had an injury history, so like that contract, I think, I didn't think it was great when the Clippers originally signed it, and to be able to unload that, I think was actually pretty smart for them. I think for me, like, this was the telltale, like, trade for Van Gundy of, man, I need to make a splash because I'm in danger of missing the playoffs again. Things have been, like, pretty mediocre here in Detroit for how bad the East has been in recent years. I read that he hasn't won a single playoff game yet, so this seemed like he was just trying to make a splash move to try to save his job and stay involved with the organization as long as possible, because in reality, he's probably not going to have to deal with the repercussions of this trade once that contract starts looking really bad in a couple years. I mean, it's a bold move for the Pistons. I think it's going to work out pretty poorly for them, if I'm going to be honest with you. I agree with what you were saying, Mark. I think this was a pretty smart deal by the Clippers because it gives them a lot of flexibility. The Boban contract's pretty bad, but Bradley's about to be gone, and Tobias is on a pretty good contract considering how he's played this year. So, and to get some, you know, get some picks, I think is always good too. I think they're going to try to rebuild. So, I mean, I think it's a smart move for the Clippers, and it's a move I feel like Detroit almost has to make. I just don't think it's going to work out for them.
All right, wait, real quick. Go on, Greg.
No, go ahead. Nah, go ahead.
Give your thoughts on the trade, and then I want to talk about something with Stan Van Gundy real quick.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. This is why you don't have a GM coach, because they don't think about the future that far. Like, they just want to try to win. I mean, like,
yep.
I think the Pistons have, like, over $70 million tied up just in their, like, three front court players with, like, Blake Griffin, Drummond, and John Lohr in, like, 2 years from now. Like, that's insane. Yeah. Like, I mean,
that's terrible.
And, like, I don't even think that they fit well together. Like, Blake's not, like, a great shooter, he's okay, but, like, he's not going to stretch the floor, and he's really only good one-on-one inside, so that's really not going to work with Drummond, who can't shoot at all. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see it working that well. Yeah, I think they might be, like, slightly better this year, but I don't even know if they'll make the playoffs, so.
Yeah, my thing was, like, do the Pistons, are they just now essentially a poorer man's version of the Pelicans in the East? Like,
yeah,
that's kind of essentially what they became to me, like, but, I don't, it, like, it. Obviously getting Blake Griffin is, you know, a good thing for the Pistons, but like I said, I'm not sure how great it really works out. And having that big contract and with Blake's like crazy injury history,
yeah.
I don't know. I think the Pistons. I mean, like I said, getting Blake Griffin's always good, but I think the Clippers got a pretty good return for him too. Like I said, how Mark said, especially when you compare it to what other star players have been going for recently, it looks like a pretty good return because they got some players that can, you know, play right now, and got some stuff for the future. So
yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. But Mark, what did you want to say about Stan?
So I think this just like it's so stupid that Stan's on the hot seat because like all right, so Reggie Jackson's been hurt each of the last 2 years. I get Reggie Jackson's like the 20th best point guard in the league. When you replace him with Ish Smith, and then like you replace Ish Smith with Dwight Bikes, who wasn't even in the NBA last year, like that just exasperates your entire point guard problem. And like they're a playoff team with Reggie Jackson, no doubt about it. But like Stan shouldn't be on the hot seat because Reggie Jackson happened to get hurt 2 years in a row when he missed like no time in his first four seasons.
I agree with you. But I think the reality from talks that I've heard about that situation and from reading online is that he is on the hot seat. And I don't think that's fair. I agree with you. If you look at their roster outside of Jackson, like even in the East, it's not a playoff team. So seeing them struggle, especially when you look at how well the Pacers have come together this year with Oladipo playing as well as he has, and the Sixers are seem to be a bit ahead of schedule, especially, you know, Ben Simmons has looked great this year. I mean, it's really not surprising that when you look at the 8 teams ahead of them, they all look than the Pistons. And Jackson being injured isn't fair, but I think it really ties into the point that Greg was saying about a coach and a GM. It's just that if a coach feels like, you know, he's on the hot seat, he's going to use his power as a GM to try to make some moves to switch it up to save his job.
Yeah. I'm saying this is more so poor ownership that Stan Van Gundy felt like he had to. And this deal very well might work out for them because like Andre Drummond can actually pass now. And like
that's the positive I would say is that Blake has always been a good passer, and we've talked about this in the last podcast where we're talking about all stars. You know, Drummond has really improved his passing game this year. So they could potentially swing the ball around well, and they could make that spacing work. I think it will be interesting to see. I actually think they're on TNT tomorrow, so that'll be a cool game to watch.
Yeah, they actually play each other, right? It's the Clippers versus the Pistons.
Oh, really?
I thought it was Cavs, Pistons, and then the Clippers, Trailblazers. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yo, Willie Reed revenge game tomorrow, guys. Watch out.
Let's go. No, yeah, but I just thought it was funny that everybody was expecting DeAndre Jordan or Lou Williams to be traded from the Clippers, and then all of a sudden it's just out of nowhere Blake Griffin got dealt. And Woj did report that DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams are still probably going to get traded, or they're at least the Clippers are trying to trade. So is this just like a clean like we're just clearing house for the Clippers and starting over? Like, is that kind of what they're doing here?
Yeah, I definitely think they're probably going to make another trade from here. I mean, I don't think they have to. Like, they got enough back that like I don't think they're like that much worse.
Yeah,
who they got back, but like I mean I don't think they're gonna get any better from what they have now. So I definitely wouldn't be surprised if they make another trade. Although the other option is that they just literally let, because like a lot of guys they have basically expire at the end of the year. DeAndre Jordan, Avery Bradley. So they could just like I think they could get up to like $30 million in cap space this year if they wanted to try to like go after like Paul George potentially or something like that.
You mean LeBron,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, LeBron.
Why would
for sure?
Dude, LeBron and Paul George. They think they can get him.
I mean, you're kind of joking, but at the same time, they're gonna have a ton of space, so it gives them a lot of flexibility. This trade, which I think is smart for them.
Yeah, but if they,
yeah, no, but
go on, Tony. They're not gonna.
I don't think they.
I actually feel like I got an alert that saying it was like reported that the Clippers think that they have a chance at LeBron.
Yeah, why, but the Bulls think they have a chance at LeBron this summer.
Well, yeah.
What? All right, yeah. One LeBron would never go to the Clippers. If he's going to L.A., we all know where he's going. And two, like...
Oh, right.
I mean...
The Rams, dude. Tight end for the Rams.
And two, it's just like...
He's got a better chance to win a title there.
No! No, it's... Does he really want to come... Is he like, oh, Danilo Gallinari and Tobias Harris... And they're not going to be able to afford Avery Bradley most likely next summer. Like, this is the team with Austin Rivers making 8 figures. Like,
yes,
no.
That's the team.
They're, no.
Rivers,
I know, I'm kidding.
They're a garbage team. Like,
Yeah, no, I think the Clippers are like I think what they should do is just be like, all right, we're getting rid of everybody. Doc, you're out of here. We're starting over.
Yeah, like, I just agree.
Think that's the best option.
Try to trade some of these expirings for first or second round picks.
Sell high on Lou Will. Yep. See what you can get for DeAndre, because I still think you can probably get something for him, mm-hmm. like something pretty good for him. And like I said, sell high on Lou Will, and then, I mean, Tobias Harris is good, and he's still only like. Somehow he's still only like what, like 25 years old?
Yeah, he's around.
Like,
there.
I swear Tobias Harris has been in the league for like 10 years.
Plus, Tobias Harris's expiring contract is gonna look real nice next summer.
Yeah,
oh, he's 25.
Yeah. Like, I don't think Avery Bradley sticks around, but no. I mean,
no,
you'll still probably get probably a late lottery pick too out of this with that first round pick, late lottery, early or late mid teens or whatever. So I mean, I think they put themselves in a good position. So I think if you can get more picks and a couple other young guys for DeAndre and Lou Will, then I mean, I think the Clippers are in a pretty decent spot to try and rebound pretty quick.
I don't know. My only thing with that is they're kind of starting from ground zero in the sense that, like, Tyrone Wallace is, like, their most promising young player.
No, they have to do a full rebuild, but it's possible, I guess, would be their point. And at least I feel like they have a better direction of where they're
going. That's true.
Yeah, I've just been feeling like that Clippers team from, you know, that they've had with the Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and then even before J.J. Redick and Chris Paul, I just thought that team kind of outwore its welcome at that point, at a certain point where it's just like, all right, this team needs to be shaken up a little bit. And they kind of did that, you know, because they traded Chris Paul, they lost J.J. Redick. But, I mean, I don't know. I just still felt like that team was kind of capped at what it could be. A Blake Griffin-led Clippers team was kind of capped. So I'm kind of happy to see them starting to switch stuff up, but
yeah, I mean, they gave it their all. They tried to make playoff runs. They got top four seeds with that lineup, but it just never came together. And if you look at once they lost Paul this year, at best, they were going to get, you know, 7 or 8 seed, maybe 6. But this team was doing nothing in the playoffs. And you're locked into Blake long-term, so you can't really rebuild like that. So you're kind of stuck in mediocrity. So I think picking a direction and moving forward with it is probably the best way for them to go.
Yeah, same. But how great is it that of the people that locked DeAndre Jordan in a house to try and get him to come back to the Clippers are now all gone and DeAndre's the only one still there? I kind of thought that was great.
That was still the craziest, like, we've had so many good stories, but that entire sequence of was the funniest last Christmas I remember in sports. Where it's like Mark Cuban is driving around like begging for his house address. I was like, what is even going on right
now? Yeah, no, I just think it's great that all the guys that were begging him to stay in LA are now not there, and he is still there. That's kind of great, but I think we'll see DeAndre and Lou Will probably on their way out by the trade deadline, though. So he won't be there too much longer, I don't think.
And we'll throw some predictions on where they end up.
Cavs, man. Cavs.
Both of them?
No. DeAndre.
See, DeAndre, we did lay out some trades last week, but, like, what do the Cavs, like, is it just, like, Tristan Thompson or Kevin? Like, who do they throw
Kevin,
at
Kevin Love at the Clippers? Or the Brooklyn pick?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think maybe you could try, like, a different pick, but I don't know what else you'd throw in there.
You could get Kevin Love and get him to recruit LeBron.
I want Kevin Love to get out of Cleveland so bad, because he's just, like, turned into, like, their scapegoat for everything, and it's incredible. Like, Kevin Love got yelled at for being sick on a weekend, but Derrick Rose took a 2-month sabbatical. It was nothing. No big deal at all. Like,
to be fair, it's all Ty Lue's fault for thinking that Kevin Love could play center. if you've ever watched him play defense, you know he can't play center.
But I'm also interested. What do you think of DeAndre to the Bucks?
I mean, if they can get off bad money and get DeAndre, then I think it's a win. But, like, if you can get off Henson and Delly and maybe, like, you throw in but the Bucks don't really have, like, the assets to make it work.
Yeah.
You'd probably have to throw in Jabari.
Or, like, Thon Maker.
Yeah.
Or their pick or something. Like, they're going to need the Clippers are going to want a pick and, like, a pick and, like, a promising young player, or at least one of them.
Yeah.
So, see, I don't think it's worth it
to
get DeAndre. I don't think that's worth it. This is a young team. I still believe in Thon Maker to a certain extent, that he could be a starting center for this team, and he's pretty flexible. I don't know. I guess it would depend on who you're giving up. Like if you can, you know, if you can unload like Delly, of course you do it. But
if you could get off Delly, Henson, and then you have to put Jabari in the trade, you do it or do you?
I would do that. I mean, I love Jabari, but I mean, with this injury, it's like you don't even know what he's going to give you when he comes back.
My biggest issue is him and Giannis don't really fit together.
Yeah.
Like, Jabari and Giannis?
Yeah.
Jabari's not a good enough defender.
Well,
yeah.
They both play the four, and I'm interested to see Giannis play the five. But if Giannis is playing the five, I kind of don't want Jabari at the four.
Yeah.
You don't. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no, I agree. Jabari is supposed to come back on Friday, though. I did see that, so.
Ooh.
He'll get
wow,
some.
Really?
He'll get some.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. Okay,
that's cool.
Gotta watch that game.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see how that works with him. But I don't know. The Clippers, like you said, I think the Clippers are kind of in a similar spot as to where how they're going to finish this year. I think to where they were before, at least after this trade. So we'll have to see how
we'll see what
the
else
rest
they do.
Of yeah how you know the rest of this shakes out and what they do, but. I don't know. Who do we want to declare a winner and a loser for the trade for our immediate reaction, or do we want to?
It's definitely.
I mean,
want to wait and see.
Are we in agreement? I think the Clippers are the winner, and even if the record's going to suffer more, and the Pistons might make the playoffs, but I think long term, when we look back on this trade a couple years from now, I think it's going to be pretty clear who the winners and losers were.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like how usually in these kind of trades, we always are like the team that got the superstar player is like always the winner. Like, and then the team that everybody claims got fleeced kind of ends up doing a little bit better than people think they're going to do. Like the Indiana one, like because Victor Oladipo ended up being like really good this year. But
yeah, I mean,
it seems like the consensus is that the Clippers won this trade.
Yeah, but I think Blake Griffin's actually the loser of this trade because he's locked up in Detroit for 4.5 years.
Yeah, and he's been shipped out there dead of the winter, so I'm sure he's really excited.
He's like
about
Mr.
It.
LA.
He's getting paid,
too.
Though.
Yeah, he is.
Bring your winter coat, dude. That's all I have to say. It's cold right now.
Yeah.
He's getting paid, though, dude.
Guess, yeah.
He's got a $39 like million player option in 3 years, so.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably
I like how did you hear how the Clippers, like, their sell to him over the offseason to sign back to them? That was like, oh, you're going to be the greatest Clipper of all time. They did a fake jersey, like, retirement, like, hang his jersey in the rafters.
Yeah. Well, part of that's on him,
I mean,
too.
I think he still might be the greatest Clipper of all time, let's be honest.
Yeah, I know, but it was like, they're, like, selling him on, like, being a Clipper lifer, and, like, they really fake retired his jersey. And, like,
yeah.
Part
they
it's
traded
a
him six
it's
months
a
later.
It's a
yeah,
business,
I know.
You know.
Yeah. Part of that's funny. On him, too. He could have tried to push for a no-trade clause, but he didn't have the leverage,
that's
I guess,
true.
So.
Do you think we're going to – actually, that's actually a good point to bring up. Do you think we're going to start seeing more people trying to ask for no trade clauses in their contracts now that we've seen,
I think
like,
if you truly want to stay with the team, then that's kind of what you got to do at this point because otherwise teams are going to move you.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, though, to get, like, that much because apparently, like, Steph Curry couldn't even get a no trade clause, which is, like, kind of crazy. So I don't know
that
how
seems
many –
That ridiculous.
Like, you have to really be, like, a freaking phenomenal player to get that. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. But Melo got one.
Yeah, Phil Jackson.
Phenomenal player, like I said.
All right, do we want to move on from the Blake Griffin stuff now then? Have we said everything we'd like to say?
I think so. Anyone want to add anything?
Yeah. No, I think we had a good discussion there.
All right, cool. All right, well, let's move on here. Let's talk about DeMarcus Cousins will now miss the rest of the season with a ruptured Achilles tendon, which sounds incredibly painful, but what do you guys think this means for Boogie and the Pelicans moving forward?
Trade Boogie, trade AD, trade Etuan Moore.
Blow
Burn
it, up.
It all. Burn it all.
Trade Etuan Moore.
No, sorry.
Gotta get rid of Etuan Moore, dog.
Don't get the value for him. Pick for Etuan Moore. Like $8 million a year. He's hitting like 44% of his threes, and he's in the top 10% of 1 and 2 defenders. What team couldn't use him besides the Warriors?
I don't know. That's a good question. But it's just funny because his name's Etuan Moore and everybody thinks he's a bum.
Yeah.
But you think they should just blow it up completely?
Yeah, I mean, like, AD's out of their first chance he gets. Like,
yeah, that's probably right.
I mean, just losing this season is pretty big for them. And I think you kind of have to wonder if Boogie comes back the same. I think you try to trade his rights for, like, a second-round pick to, like, Dallas so Mark Cuban can finally get the star center he's been chasing for like a decade. I don't know. It's just a hard place to be in right now because they're doing so well. But Boogie might be out a full year, which is next year's All-Star break. So they wouldn't make the playoffs again next year. And I think now's the time to strike. Get rid of AD while the value's at its peak. Get rid of each one more while he's still shooting 44% from three. See if anyone wants Jrue Holiday. They probably don't.
Who would trade for Boogie, though?
The Mavericks. I mean, you're giving up a second-round pick.
What would you get? You would get his bird rights or something? That's all you'd get?
Yeah. So maybe you trade him to a team with, like, a bad contract, and then you pick up, like, a first-round pick or two. What if you gave him up for, say, like, Evan Turner and two first-round picks? Then the Blazers could stay over the cap and re-sign Boogie.
I don't know if the Blazers would do that.
The Blazers don't want Boogie. But you also get off the Evan Turner contract. And you stay under the tax, realistically. Or you don't go as far.
But you still got to pay Boogie. I don't know. And like you said, he knows if he's the same. So
Yeah, but then you also don't have to pay Yusuf Nurkic, which is a win in itself because he's been terrible this year. And he's kind of their only option at center.
Yeah, I don't know. It is kind of interesting to see what happens with Boogie because, I mean, so do you think the Pelicans just try and trade his bird rights to anybody that wants him for whatever they can get?
Yeah, get rid of his bird rights, take on a shitty contract from 2016 and get a pick or two back for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Bossman said, that it's like, what, like the who would all be, like the Blazers, maybe the Mavericks, but like, I don't know. I just think it's Wizards? Kind of a tough... I just think it's a tough situation. I don't know. I just don't know if anybody would be willing to give up a bunch of stuff for Boogie's bird rights.
What if you told the Knicks, we'll take Joakim Noah, give us two first-round picks, and you can have the restricted rights to Boogie? Like, you're telling me that they're like, no, we'd rather have Joakim Noah and two mid-lottery picks. Like, are you kidding me?
No, yeah, I guess that they would do that, but would the Pelicans be willing to take two more years of Joakim Noah's salary?
Yeah, they already have a Sheik. They already have a Jinsa. Like, might as well add another shitty center who can't do anything.
Oh, God. Jesus, that would be the worst trio of center contracts ever.
Yeah. Plus, like, Jesus Christ. if you get Tatum Brown and that Lakers Kings pick, like, you have Tatum Brown, you're going to have three firsts in the next draft. Like, maybe four if you can get first for each one more somebody. Like, you're in a pretty good place with young talent. You've basically rebuilt completely on the fly.
Yeah, I guess that would be that is a pretty good move. So you also think they should just get rid of Anthony Davis too?
I mean, I can't see him staying.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, if you can turn DeMarcus Cousins into something useful, is it not just trying worth holding on to Anthony Davis and then seeing if you can make the playoffs still?
No, because you're not going to get anything of immediate value back for Boogie. Like, you're either going to take on a bad contract and get picks or get, like, a second-round pick for his bird rights. Yeah. There's not going to be anything big for just his bird rights. It's going to be more so, like, another team can also move off money. In which case, you're basically taking the Brook Lopez, like, Nets route that they did last year.
Oh, yeah.
But just, like, a lesser extent.
Yeah. I guess that would work. If they can find a team that would take him and get, you know, a couple picks for him or something, I guess that would be a really good, pretty good move. Yeah.
But this would be the time to trade AD. I could totally see that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if they would do that, especially because, like, they just, like, a week ago, they had hopes of, you know, making the playoffs and at least doing something, although probably not.
Yeah, it's such a brutal turn.
Yeah, it really is. To just, like, be like, oh, all right, now we're going to trade everyone. It's kind of tough to do to the fan base.
Yeah. Well, Boogie,
but I don't know.
Go on, Marshall.
No, go ahead. You're good.
Well, I say, if Boogie was going to be healthy for, like, the start of next year, that'd be different. But it's, like, a 10 to 12-month injury. So, like, he might not be peak Boogie until the All-Star break next year. So you're basically...
And he might never be the same,
So you're basically...
He literally might never be the same.
Not only punting on this season, but definitely punting on next season. And AD has, what, two or three more years after this one? So, like, after next season, you have one or two years left of AD, and you're like, what do we do with him? Like, they're going to have cap space, I guess, but, like...
No, yeah, that's true. I guess I really... I really wasn't thinking that he's going to be out for a full year, but, yeah, that kind of makes it... Because, like, part of me was, like, if he was going to be able to be ready for the beginning of next season, then I feel like it would be worth it just to try and, like, bring him back and run it back and try and make playoffs, if he'll do it.
Right.
But just because, you know, making the playoffs is, you know, still a thing that teams want to do. So just because you're not going to win a title doesn't mean you should just punt everything away, but... But, I mean, if since he's not going to be back until at least halfway through the season, then it's probably worth trying to deal off his rights to somebody and try and trade high on Boogie and or on AD and see what you can get back and kind of start over.
I mean, I think they're still going to, like, definitely be in playoff contention, though, this year. Like, because now with the Clippers trading Blake, that's another team.
Yeah, yeah, who gets that last spot? Do the Pelicans still get it? You think the Jazz may come all the way up? I mean, they're, like, 6 games back right now. I mean, there's a lot of season left, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. Like, the Pelicans could still very well make the playoffs.
Yeah, but if they get the 7 or 8 seed to get swept by the Rockets and the Warriors, like, who cares?
Yeah, but that might be, like, a reason to go for next year, because then at least you think, all right, we made the playoffs without Boogie. If we get him back halfway through the season and we could still, you know, maybe 500 or so by the time he gets back, then we can make a run and get to, like, the 5 seed or something, and who knows.
But the West,
I mean, you're not gonna win it, but, like, you know, you at least have a good team and can make a run and be exciting.
Yeah, but the scary thing is the West might be better next year. Like, Denver's definitely gonna be better. Utah's most likely gonna be better. I mean, the Clippers might tank, but, like, the Grizzlies might be back. Like, there might be an even tougher playoff race next year. And if you're gonna have to start the year with, like, a Ginsa or Ashik playing minutes, like, I'm sorry, you're not making the playoffs. I don't care how good Anthony Davis is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is tough. That is tough for them. I don't know.
Plus, but they're going to crater without Boogie.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that
I agree.
That eight spot in the West is not going to be too great anymore.
The West looks so loaded, and now it's like, well, there are 7 really good teams.
No, that's what, like, I don't know. Everybody was like, oh, there's like 10 or 11 teams for 8 spots in the West this year, and now it's like, there's 7 teams that are actually good, and then there's a couple meh, and then after that, really.
I mean,
Utah got real hurt, and
yeah,
Memphis lost Conley, who's kind of their most important player.
Yeah.
And the Clippers have been really hurt and still might get in. Like, I don't know.
I still think the Clippers do have an outside shot at making it still, though.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, with how well Lou Will has been playing, I mean, I agree with what Mark was saying before. Like, if you're replacing Blake with Tobias, like, that's, I'm not sure how big of a downgrade that is. Like, I don't think Tobias is as good of a player as Griffin, obviously, but defensively, like, Tobias has improved a bit.
He's also averaging, like, you know, like, what, like, 18 a game and shooting 45% from the field, 40 from three. Like, he's not, like, a scrub. Like, Tobias Harris is good.
Yeah, that's what
good.
I'm saying. Like, difference between Blake and Tobias is, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy for thinking that, but.
The big difference is in the playmaking. And Blake can actually, like, play in the post for Tobias, and more of a face-up player. But, like, if you don't need Blake's playmaking that much, like, and then you add Avery Bradley, who is a good player when he's not taking, like, a shit ton of pull-up mid-range jumpers.
Yeah, we should help you defensively, too, because they don't really have any defensive guards.
Yeah.
Austin Rivers. Bill Simmons voted him all defensive second team last year.
Yeah.
You know, and Danilo's coming back.
And doesn't, like...
For who knows how long.
And doesn't, like, theoretically Tobias Harris's play style mesh better with DeAndre Jordan's if they were to keep him?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like...
Yes.
I feel like that fit is kind of a little bit more seamless, and I don't know. That race for the 8th seed is going to be interesting to see who ends up getting there. But like I said, it might just be whoever's not injured will just kind of make it by default.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Pelicans are only 2 games ahead of the Clippers. So if the Nuggets keep pace and Portland keeps pace, I think New Orleans drops out and the Clippers get in.
Yeah, that's probably what happens.
Yeah, I would put that as the most likely. But you never know what the Clippers are going to do, too, in the next couple weeks.
So they could blow it all up.
Yeah.
You know, they can make more deals.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's move on from this DeMarcus Cousins stuff and hit on one last NBA injury before we move on. Andre Roberson of the Oklahoma City Thunder will also be missing the rest of the season because he ruptured his left patellar tendon. What do you guys think this means for the Thunder moving forward, for the rest of the season at least?
I don't know what kind – I mean, they don't have a lot of assets, but they do have to make a trade.
Yeah, I agree. I think they do have to try and get a wing to go in there and, you know, actually be able to play meaningful minutes. But I don't know how many of those are out there and what they could give up to get. Like, I don't know. I saw some people on Twitter talking about, like, maybe trying to get, like, Jonathan Simmons off the Magic, which you might be able to get him for, like, kind of cheap. And, I mean, he's played in playoff games before, and, you know, he's, like, a athletic defensive player that's he's not, obviously not as good as Andre Roberson, but, I mean, you think he could at least give you somewhat of what Roberson was giving you on the defensive end. So, I don't know. I thought Avery Bradley was also somebody they might try and look at, but obviously that might not.
Well, they could still get him. Now.
They could still.
No, they could definitely still get him.
Yeah, they could.
That's definitely a possibility. Yeah, they need another wing because they just have no one else.
Yeah, like it's like so, Alex Abrines and Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah.
I just don't know if Singler's salary and like Terrence Ferguson 2 second-round picks, like, does that get you Jonathan Simmons? Like,
But like, what if you threw in like Josh Huestis?
I mean, cool.
Like, I don't,
he's
like,
optimistically, best case scenario, could be like a ninth man one day.
Yeah, but like realistically, like, how much do you think the Magic are going to be like demanding for Jonathan Simmons?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's definitely better than like. I mean, it depends on how much they believe in Terrence Ferguson, but ultimately, like, they have their second-round pick, like the Celtics. Like, that Celtics second-round pick is bottom five. It really doesn't have much, like, value.
Yeah.
Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Thunder picks, and, like, they either have theirs or, like, Miami's or something weird. They have somebody's second-round pick, either this
Terrence
year or
next
year.
Terrence Ferguson's a decent asset, though. I almost wonder if they wouldn't trade him, but.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that, too.
Because I don't think Sam Presti would want to. But I mean, he's definitely their best asset, probably. Because he's only 19. He's had some decent games this year.
Yeah.
All right. He's had like 2 decent games. Let's calm down a little bit.
Yeah. He said a couple.
A couple. They could look at James Ennis too. Another possibility.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, James Ennis is fine, but like.
I mean, you're just not. I mean, you're obviously not looking for like somebody that's going to be. You know, you're not going to get an actually like really great player at this, you know. I just think they need somebody who can give them like at least.
They just need some solid defense.
Yeah, they need somebody that can give you at least a decent bit of what Roberson gives you on the defensive end, which I know is hard to find because Roberson's really good defensively. But I don't know. I think you have to just find a role playing wing that can play minutes because I'm not trusting Terrence Ferguson in playoff games. Like I'm not really trusting Alex Abrines in like.
No.
You know, like crunch time during the playoffs. Like, I just think you need somebody that has some experience that can actually play. And, you know, obviously you're not going to find anybody great, but I feel like they need somebody. And, like, I don't know. I'd have to look into more who they could possibly throw some money at, but, or not money at, but, you know, see what they can throw a trade at. So, but I don't know. I think they definitely need something because their defense is, like, way better when Andre Roberson plays than when he sits.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a big loss.
All right. Anybody have any more to add on Andre Roberson?
It just sucks. You hate to see injuries like this for, you know, contending teams.
Yeah, that's. I agree. Do you guys want to move on to some NFL stuff? Because, you know, the Super Bowl's next week, believe it or not. I don't know if you guys know that.
Let's do it.
All right. So let's just do – we're going to run down some, you know, some gambling stuff here. We got some over-unders and, you know, some game lines and whatnot. So let's look here. The overall game line for – or the spread for the game is New England is a 4.5-point favorite over Philadelphia. What do you guys think – what would you guys take – on this line?
You got to take New England.
Yeah.
Philly, dude. Give me Philly. Give me the points.
Really?
I feel like
make the case.
Okay, make the case.
Let's hear the case.
I think, first of all, I think New England is slightly overrated this year. Their last 12 games, they played 2 playoff teams. Well, I'm discounting the Bills because they shouldn't have made the playoffs. And Tennessee also is kind of trash. Tennessee's also trash, so I'm discounting those 2 teams. But they've played the Steelers.
They've played 2 playoff teams.
Should have lost,
but 2 more that actually made. But 4
discounting
that actually
the
made
worst
the playoffs.
Discounting the worst 2 teams in the playoffs, they've played 2 playoff teams.
Yeah.
They played the Steelers.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to hear it. It's true. Those teams are trash.
Yeah, but they made the playoffs. You heard
no arguments from me.
They're in the AFC.
The Bills had a negative spread.
They played two playoff teams if you discount the two other playoff
teams. The Titans have to be one of the worst playoff teams I can ever remember. And the fact that the Chiefs lost to them is just embarrassing.
It was just a funny sentence. It's like they played two playoff teams. If you discount the two other teams that made the playoffs,
I get it. But you get my point, right?
They played
the Steelers, who they should have lost to. And they played the Jaguars, who they were down basically the entire game and needed to come back in the fourth. And still only won by four, right? So they really haven't been challenged that much this year. And I think it's going to be a close game. Plus, I think Philly's slightly underrated because they destroyed Minnesota. And then even that Atlanta game was close, but they gave up like two turnovers in that game. So if they clean up some mistakes, I think they're a slightly underrated team. People are just underrating them because they lost Wentz.
Yeah.
So I just think this game's going to be close. And, I mean, I could easily see New England win, but I think it might require, like, a late last-minute drive.
See, I agree with you on that analogy to a certain extent, but that was me when New England was, 9-point favorites against Jacksonville. I was like, this game's going to be way closer than that. Like, I actually bet Jacksonville there against the spread and made a good amount of money. But, yeah, I don't know. To me, I think this line seems very fair because, I mean, I think the general consensus is that New England is, I would say, a touchdown better than Philadelphia. I think 4.5 is giving enough
touchdown
to Philadelphia.
Philadelphia was, 13-3 or 14-2 in the regular season?
Yeah, but I'm telling you this. If Philadelphia didn't blow out Minnesota, if that game was a close win, New England would be 6.5.
But they did blow out Minnesota.
I think the line opened at 6.5.
I think the line did open at that. I think it did open at 6.5.
Yeah, it did. It was like at least 5.5, I think.
I'm saying, I think people are falling for that bias where Philadelphia looked really good in their last game and the Patriots only they should have lost to Jacksonville. I guess my opinion is more that I think Jacksonville has the best defense in the league, and I think Philadelphia's defense is obviously very
Philadelphia's defense is really good, yeah.
I think Jacksonville's been – it's kind of crazy to say they've been underrated this year because, like, they've gotten tons of props or whatever, but I truly think they were the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think 4.5 seems right. So you got – do you think the Eagles will win the game, I guess, if you had to bet against that?
I mean, I probably wouldn't just because – I wouldn't bet on Tom Brady, but if you're giving me 4.5 points, I'm definitely taking that.
Take
the points. Okay.
I don't know. I think this is kind of a little bit of like in the lead up to the game, we're trying to talk ourselves into this is going to be a close one. And I feel like New England's going to end up winning by more than 4.5 points. Like
That's where I'm at.
Like I'm kind of with Marshall where I just kind of think New England's a touchdown better. Like I don't know. I just feel like we're trying to talk ourselves into like this is going to be a close one. And then it's like, because I feel like we do this all the time with
everything, I get what you're saying.
Like, it's like the title game, so we hype ourselves up for it that it's going to be good, and then it ends up not being good. But maybe Philadelphia surprises me. I don't know. I'm not going to bet on Nick Foles. Let's just put it at that.
I'm with Boss, man. Give me the points.
Oh, another thing that could. All right, I like it, Twain.
I'm going so far to say that. All right, so let's say 20% of the time Nick Foles shits the bed and this is not a competitive game. But those, if we discount those 20% of games and the 80% of games where Nick Foles does not shit the bed, I think the Eagles are the better team. They have a much better defense.
Yeah.
I mean, I
would not argue with that.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with that either.
Their running backs are kind of, I would say they're close to a push because like the New England really does have a bruiser like LeGarrette Blount and like, I don't know. I think the receiving corps obviously. Wait, does Philly doesn't have Ernst, do they? Is he still out?
Sorry.
Ernst is still out, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Gronk gives them a decent edge there, but, like, in actual terms of receivers, like, Philly might have a, like, similar crop of talent to, like,
disrespecting Danny Amendola. Like,
I mean, Alshon Jeffrey is, by a pretty decent margin, the best receiver in this game.
Yeah,
with all due respect to Brandon Cook.
I know, I was kidding, but,
yeah.
Continue.
But, like, I don't know if you shut down New England's run and make them a pass-heavy team. And then, like, I don't know. I just think the Eagles' defense is good enough to limit the Patriots as long as Nick Foles doesn't shit the bed. I'm pretty sure that there's at least a fighting chance for the Eagles in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give them a fighting chance, sure, but I don't know. I also might be underrating them just strictly because they don't have Carson Wentz. I mean, that actually might be what I'm doing. But I don't know. I just feel like 4.5 points.
I do want to say Ertz is healthy. He played in the championship game, so he'll be playing in the Super Bowl. Oh, okay. I just want to clarify that. Right.
So the receiving corps, I think, are pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I 100% get that take. But and I will say, I love better Patriots when I feel like they're getting too much credit. I seriously thought Atlanta was going to beat them last year, and I should have bet on that game. I didn't, but I was a big believer in Atlanta last year beating them. They should have won the game. Let's not get into that now.
Okay, so I had no faith in Atlanta
last week. I thought Jacksonville was going to win last week, to be honest with you. I legitimately thought they were going to win. And like I said, I just think that this Eagles team played, but I don't know. I just find it very hard to bet against Belichick and Brady.
Yeah,
especially
that's where I'm at too.
One other thing to consider: a lot of people will make that argument that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, they've been in the Super Bowl a ton, they know how to prepare, all that stuff, which is true. But the Patriots don't blow teams out in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you look at last year, Atlanta never played in the Super Bowl. You could have made the same argument, and obviously New England still won, but it was obviously a really close game.
I want to see.
No, I agree, but I don't think 7 points is a blowout. I just think 4.5 is too tight. I don't know. I think they'll win by more than that.
I want to say the Patriots have won 3 of their Super Bowls by a field goal, maybe 4.
Yeah,
actually, that might be right. Yeah,
the game against Atlanta was the largest Super Bowl victory they've had by 6.
Yeah. Jeez. So
all the other ones have been 4 or less.
Well, we all know that since the line's at 4.5, New England's inevitably going to win by 4 to screw everybody. But
oh my god,
I would still take New England at 4.5, but I know that it's going to end up them winning by 4 because that's how stuff works. Especially if I were to bet on it, if I actually put actual money on it, they would win by 4, and I would lose by 0.5. But anyway,
I think I'm going to put some money on it. I think I will. I like to put my money where my mouth is with these games.
All right, well, the odds for the MVP of the Super Bowl is Tom Brady is obviously the favorite at a -110, with Nick Foles next at a +325, Rob Gronkowski in third at +900, Deion Lewis, Danny Amendola, and Jay Ajayi at +1800. Those were the next, they were all tied at that, so I just decided to list all of them. So who would you guys put your money on out of those top 6? As your odds to win the Super Bowl MVP?
I love the odds for Jay Ajayi. I think if the Eagles do find a way of winning, I don't think it's going to be Nick Foles passing for 300 yards or whatever. I think it'll be Ajayi getting loose, getting some touchdowns, and I could totally see him winning it. And those odds are fantastic. Because at the end of the day, I do kind of agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think New England just wins by 7 to 10 points. But if Philadelphia were to pull it off, getting +1800 for Ajayi for MVP, I think is totally realistic. Especially when you compare that to +325 for Foles.
Yeah.
Those are much worse odds for players that I would say have similar chances of winning the MVP if the Eagles win. I would say Foles definitely has a slight advantage because it's a quarterback-driven league at this point. But I could see Ajayi having a big game and winning it too.
The problem with Ajayi, though, is that he's probably going to split carries with LeGarrette Blount, though.
Yeah.
And if Ajayi goes for 100 yards, but LeGarrette Blount is 3 TDs, then I don't know. That probably kind of cancels out. That's the only issue with him, I feel like.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair point. I just think he has a chance to get some breakout runs that will be remembered.
Yeah.
And at that point, that's how he would win it.
Yeah. See, my whole thing is I think if New England wins, there's a 0% chance anybody but Tom Brady wins the MVP.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree. The smart bet is
that's what I would go with.
Yeah, honestly, I think New England's gonna win, and I think if New England wins, there's no chance anybody else gets it, gets Super Bowl MVP, but Tom Brady. So
that's why if you think the Eagles have a good chance, I think the Ajayi odds are really good. And
yeah, I actually agree with you that I agree with you on that one. Actually, if you were gonna make a bet for if you think the Eagles are gonna win, then I think Ajayi actually
I think betting.
Is a good
betting on some of the Yeah, betting on either him or Blood or both of them, honestly.
Yeah, I was going to say that, probably.
Yeah.
You could bet, you could put money down on both of them. And if the Eagles win, I think there's a good chance one of them, one of those two wins it. Because the Foles, I mean, you know, like I said, it is a quarterback-driven league. So if Foles throws for a few touchdowns, he'll get remembered.
Yeah.
But I think there's a decent chance one of those running backs has a big game for the Eagles, too.
All right, hear me out on this one. If you're going to bet on Eagles running back, it should be Wendell Smallwood. He's 100, he's 100-1 odds. First of all, he's a pass-catching back. But second of all, I was reading draft profiles on him, and he profiled as a complete runner. He's like 5'11", 210. He's a great in-between-the-tackles runner. So they've been using him as a pass-catcher all year. What if they put him in there as a decoy and actually have him, like, run the ball? He picks up a short touchdown or two like that, or gets, like, six receptions for 80 yards and, like, a short rushing touchdown.
He's still playing.
I like the boldness there, but I just checked. He has zero rushing attempts and zero receiving yards in both of their playoff games.
Exactly.
So I could
exactly.
Could, you know, if you want the really long shot, that's a decent bet, I guess. Hey, why not?
I'm just saying. Look at the odds. at the odds.
I will say, I just looked it up. LeGarrette Blount's odds. He is a plus 3,300.
Okay, maybe those are better than Wendell Smallwood's.
I you know what? I might change that to Blount instead of Ajayi because those are almost double. You can make almost double the winnings.
The revenge game.
You guys are crazy. I'm going with Steven Gostkowski at plus 6,600. I'm taking the kicker.
Be fair, if the Vikings had made
the under is what I'm hearing.
If the Vikings had made it, I would have put a bet on Kai Forbath.
Oh, I kind of agree. Dude, if I get us in the odds, right?
No, like four or five and six field goal games this year. Like,
yeah, no.
He's like money. He's so good.
Yeah.
Like an 18 to 14 or something like that. Six field goals. You never know.
It's
possible.
All right. Well, we'll move on from the total points scored. Do you think Philly will get over 21.5 points scored in this game?
I do.
Yes. I think they will.
So yeah, that's
a tough one.
It is a tough one for me. Because I think they might. I think they do have a decent chance because New England's defense really isn't that good. So
that's where I'm at. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And it's going to be a slow-paced game from the Eagles, to be fair, though. So
yeah,
just like the lack of drives, it might not. But, you know, I'm picking the Eagles to win, which means they probably have to score more than 21 points.
Yeah, I don't see them. I don't see them holding the Patriots.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe 21, but not much less than that.
Yeah.
Like yeah. 21's the minimum I see the Patriots scoring.
Yeah. Well, New England's over-under for total points scored is 27. So you guys, well, Mark and Greg probably are going to take the under on that, unless they think Philly's scoring in the 30s.
Fools Brady shootout? Better quarterback wins.
I don't hate it. All right, well, what do you guys think the margin of victory would be? New England 1-6 or winning by 1-6 is a plus 300. New England winning by 7-12 is a plus 400. New England winning by 13-18 is a plus 600. Philadelphia winning by 1-6 is a plus 425. Philadelphia winning by 7-12 is a plus 700. And Philadelphia by 13-18 is a plus 1400. What do you guys think the margin of victory will be? And what would you guys want to place your bets on that one?
Go on.
Go, Twain.
Nah, I'll let you go first. I feel like I talked the most.
All right. We're probably going the same way because I was thinking a close game. And so I'm interested in like the 1-6 probably. If you parlay those two, I think it's going to be like a 6-point game. That's not bad. You get like at least 2-1 probably there.
So you would get a 1-6 either way?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you probably get like if you parlay those two, it's like 2-1 because that's what I'm kind of. I think it's gonna be a close game.
Well, technically speaking, you wouldn't parlay them.
But... Yeah, you can't
or whatever. Yeah,
you because one bet them both.
Whatever. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No. I would probably actually. I think it will be close, but I do think New England wins by more than 4.5. Obviously, because I said that before. So, I would probably bet New England 1-6, and maybe throw on a 7-12 just in case they somehow score, you know, actually beat them by more. But I don't hate the Philadelphia 1-6 either, just in case they do edge out a win. Because I think if Philadelphia does win, it will
be close.
It will be by a small margin.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Oh, dude, this is why I love the spicy Eagles by 13-18 for plus 1400.
Marshall's like the classic. Hey, I'm taking it strictly for odds purposes.
I am. I'm looking at these odds. I'm saying which of these results could I see happening where I think the odds don't exactly line up. I mean, if you really think the Eagles are going to win this game, I think a huge part of it's going to be their defense, like playing really well and creating some turnovers and stopping the Patriots' offense. I think like two touchdowns for the Eagles win. I don't think it's that unreasonable or unrealistic where that's double the winnings for 7-12 for the Eagles. So I think that would be, if I would place like, you know, a bet where I'm trying to win a lot of money, that's where I would go. But I mean, I already said, I would probably say New England 1-6 is the way to go with that. Cause I do think it will be like a 5-6 point win for them.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we'll move on from the NFL Super Bowl stuff, and we're going to get into some music next. Want to have a discussion on who we think is the most influential rapper of all time. So, Mark, I know you have many a thoughts.
I'm gonna go last. I want to hear what everyone else thinks before I change your minds with the correct answer and everyone just agrees with me.
All right. Well, somebody else.
Oh, wow.
Anybody else want to take? Marshall, do you want to take this first? Then give who you think. You can give a couple. You don't have to say who your definitive one is.
Man.
You can give your short list if you'd like.
Yeah. So I feel like There are a couple different ways to look at this. You could look at it influential in the sense that who is bringing the most fans into hip-hop, who is having the most effect on, like, music culture or, like, pop culture just in general. Or you could say who is the most influential in terms of, like, rappers and future rappers and influencing kind of hip-hop itself. So I have a couple. I mean, I think they're pretty obvious. Most of these I feel like are going to be pretty obvious. I will say the first one that jumps out to me and probably, you know, the rapper that really got me into hip hop originally, you guys probably know this, would be Kanye West. I think when you really look back at what hip hop was at the time when he came out with, what was that, College Dropout was his first album. We were kind of big in the whole gangster rap scene as far as DMX was really popular, 50 Cent, a lot of violence. I think Kanye was, I'm not going to say the first one to kind of adopt songs because it had definitely been done before, but he was definitely the one to popularize that. And I think like the whole generalization about him is always like, oh, rapper, everyone was wearing chains and, you know, whatever else. Really kind of set the scene for how the hip-hop scene is right now, where you see rappers rapping about all kinds of stuff, like Drake's new song is literally about my bed, I'm sorry. Like, if you think 20, any rapper would be saying that, like, you're fucking crazy. Like, you know? Kanye really made that possible, I would say. He started that with his first album, and I think just his presence in hip-hop moving forward kind of made that possible. I think, obviously, you got to look at the older guys, it's going to be Tupac and Biggie, especially when you see how influenced both respective coast rap scenes.
Yeah.
You know, all the East Coast rappers growing up and all the West Coast rappers growing up idolized them. I mean, you just need to listen to Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly, the end of that, to see how big of an influence Tupac was on him. I think that's in generally the case for almost all West Coast rappers. And in the East Coast, I think it's very similar with Biggie. And I would say, to just lesser extent, Jay-Z and Nas. I think as far as like a technical rapper, the one I do want to give a shout out to is Rakim from Eric B and Rakim, because I took some time recently to really dig through their older albums, like their original albums. And especially if you listen to music from that time, which was like the late 80s, that was when Public Enemy was really big and Run DMC. It was a lot of very aggressive rapping style. I think Rakim was the first rapper who popularized just like a laid-back flow over a beat, and I think that was huge for rap because I think when you look at what that has done for hip-hop, it's kind of been a huge influence in style to the point where he was the first one to say you don't need to be shouting into the mic for this kind of stuff. You can kind of just be going over a beat and taking a chill. So what else do you think, Greg? Who else do you have to add to that list?
Let's see. Well, good, I'll jump in. I actually would probably give a little bit more credit to Jay-Z, surprisingly. I probably wouldn't expect that because I'm not really a huge Jay-Z guy. But I feel like Jay-Z was one of, like, the first people in rap to be, like, a real, like, cultural kind of, like, icon thing. Like, when I hear people, older people talk about, like, what it was like when Jay was, like, in his prime, like, he was, like, the first dude to be, like, he would say something, like, oh, I'm wearing this, and then a bunch of people would go out and buy that because Jay-Z was wearing it. Like, Jay-Z was kind of, like, the first big, like, I don't know, I at least that's from my understanding because, I mean, I wasn't really, you know, around during Jay-Z's, you know, peak career, but I feel like that he was kind of the first or one of the first really big like cultural kind of icons that rap had kind of had at the time. Mm-hmm. And as far as some like new guys, I think Lil Wayne actually deserves a shout out for like, cause I mean, he's been around for a while and he put, you know, without him, we probably wouldn't have Drake and we probably wouldn't have a lot of these like rappers that we have today. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm with you on the Tupac and Biggie stuff. Obviously, you know, they're like everybody, you know, they're like the two most idolized rappers from like current day people are like, oh, Tupac was my idol. Oh, Biggie was my idol. So obviously those two are very influential. And I do agree on this. And Kanye definitely does have a big influence over the, you know, he kind of like started, he made it all right to be like, like you said, like a nerd kind of rapper. I mean, you didn't use the word nerd rapper, but it was like, you don't have to be like a gangster street dude to be like successful in hip hop. And he's showing definitely really
in songs.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And just like you said, just not really rapping about, you know, he made it all right to rap about other things where, and
like,
you know,
Jesus and his mother.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like his strained relationship with his cousin or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So I'm with you on that one. I don't know.
Although Tupac did have a couple of songs like that. I will give that, but I think Tupac's general vibe was definitely, he went for the gangster rapper kind of vibe.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess that's a good point about Jay-Z. I would add on to that another rapper that stands out to me as far as someone who used their hip-hop career to kind of bolster their celebrity to a larger extent. That would be Ice Cube and Snoop. Because you think about it, like, Snoop Dogg hasn't really made, like, rap music in a while, but he's such a huge celebrity at this point because he used that to transition into, like, becoming a pop culture icon. And then kind of related to Lil Wayne, like, I think Dr. Dre has to be mentioned as far as someone. I you know, not obviously not a technical rapper in that sense. He's more
doesn't
have the best, like, lines or songs. But I thought, what is my favorite song where it's just Dr. Dre rapping? And, like, that's, like, a pretty hard question because I think almost all of my favorite songs by him is, like, guest first. But when you look at, like, the influence he's had on hip-hop as a whole, like, the rappers he introduced to the game and who, like, he popularized, I mean, he might be at the top as far as
influence. Oh, yeah. Especially if you would combine it as a group of N.W.A. itself is definitely at the top of this list.
Because, yeah, like, N.W.A. absolutely. Was huge. That's the thing, yeah. And then he transitioned that into, you know, he broke out Snoop Dogg. He broke out Eminem, he broke out 50 Cent, he broke out Kendrick to a certain extent. It's like, he's definitely had a huge, he's had the longest shadow, I would say, of hip hop.
I mean, Dr. Dre pretty much has almost had his hands in almost any West Coast rapper that's kind of really become popular since he became relevant himself. So it's like you said, as far as like somebody who had a large influence over what has kind of happened on, at least on the West Coast for Dr. Dre, he definitely should be probably mentioned in this. But Greg, I don't know, do you have anybody that you'd like to add before we hear Mark's correct
answer? Yeah, not really.
As he puts it.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I think you guys hit on the main ones. Like, they definitely came out, like, N.W.A., a lot of them came out of that same era. So I'll cede the floor to Mark. What do you all got?
Right. Well, so first of all, quick shout out to Andre 3000 for putting Southern music on the rap or on the map and just like
I mean Outkast in general, that was a huge snub by me.
I had them on my short list, but they weren't really one of the main ones, but I did think of them when I was making this.
I mean, they were the first like big Southern rap group, like then.
Yeah, 100%.
Like in night they won Best New Artist, like there was no like main huge just like Southern rap group or Southern rap artists, and like now you look at Atlanta. Atlanta has more good rap artists than the rest of the world.
Yeah. So that was actually one of the reasons why I was like heavily like I considered them, because I was like they really kind of made Atlanta hip hop like a relevant thing, and now there's just like almost an endless supply of like quality Atlanta hip hop artists. So
yeah, I think another interesting point with them is like up until that point, hip hop had been a very like East Coast / West Coast centric genre where like almost all rappers were coming from one of the two coasts.
Yeah, and like people and from
Outkast was really the first like I guess duo of rappers to come from a different area and be really popular at it, you know.
Also, yeah. I would say that like East Coast versus West Coast, like a lot of people on the East Coast didn't listen to West Coast rap. The same could be said vice versa. They were really the first like rap artists to be accepted by like the whole country. They were the first like critically acclaimed national rap group with like no beefs across coasts or like people not trying to discredit them because of where they were from.
I would like to mention too, they had a huge influence on like the culture because they were like the first rappers to like start like dressing kind of
different. Oh, Andre 3000 was a fashion icon.
Yes.
Anyways, the second day I want to point, or second thing I want to point to real quick is obviously Kanye. So Graduation dropped the same day as 50 Cent's album Curtis back in like, I want to say 2007.
Yeah, and you're right. It was 07.
Kanye like beat him by like hundreds of thousands of units in first week sales, which is really when I think like was really like a signifier of the change of eras.
Yeah.
And obviously Kanye production wise is very influential, but, there are two artists that I want to focus on. The first, obviously, being Lil Wayne. I mean, you just look at all the... I don't want to give him too much credit for Drake, because, like, Drake, after So Far Gone, was, like, the most sought... I don't think there's been a more sought-after rapper since him, if we're being completely honest. Like, Drake would have blown up regardless of what label he went to, yada, yada. But, like, and Lil Wayne has had, like, quite a few... Like, I thought Twist, Gutta Gutta. Like, I thought they were going to make it. Lil Wayne never really, like... was able to get them there. Yeah. But, like, overall, you even look at, like, his mixtape, the way he just started dropping, like, 3 mixtapes a year influenced, like, a lot of artists to do it that way. And then, like, Rebirth, I get Rebirth was objectively a failure. But, like, I mean, it influenced artists like Travis Scott, Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Yachty today to really, and, like, even, like, SoundCloud rappers and, like, some trap stars to, like, start putting, like, guitar riffs and like more emo music.
Yeah, like genre a little bit.
Yeah. Also, Lollipop, I would just like to point out this timeline. March 2008, Lollipop drops. June 2008, the Lollipop remix with Kanye West drops. November 2008, 808s and Heartbreaks drops. That timeline is not a coincidence. That's absolutely not a coincidence. That Kanye like hopped on that Lollipop beat and was like, I could do this for an entire album. And I think Lil Wayne should probably deserve some credit and was probably, at least like changing the sound wise, the most influential album of the last decade, which he influenced. But my ultimate, so my choice for this, Lil Wayne probably has the most influence in like what the current sound is. Because even like you look at like Young Thug came was a huge Lil Wayne influence. Everything like that. But if you look at the artist who has distinctly changed rap music the most in his career, it's Gucci Mane.
Dude, I was going to mention him. I was really going to say him, and I didn't know if that was going to be a hot take or not.
Oh, God, no. All right, so I'm going to run through Gucci Mane collab projects real quick. 2008, Yo Gotti. 2011, Flock of Flame. 2011, Brick Squad. 2011, Future. Future Firsts charts in 2011. 2013, Young Scooter and Young Dolph. 2013, Pee Wee Longway. 2013, he drops a triple album. The first album had Metro Boomin, Sunny Digital, and Done Deal on it. Coincidentally, Metro Boomin first charts in 2013. Sunny Digital had 3 charted songs by 2013. Then he drops the second album. These are the World War III albums, Molly, Gas, and Lean.
The second one's with 808 Mafia, who coincidentally also first charts in 2013. Then he drops Lean with Zaytoven, Honorable Cena, and Mike Will Made It. Zaytoven had been around for a little bit, but like none of them were like huge guys. 2013, album with Rich Homie Quan. 2014, he does another triple album, World War 3D. The first one with Young Thug. Or wait, no, he did Thug Remain La Flair with Young Thug, then triple album. One with Migos, one with Young Thug, one with Pee Wee Longway. Pee Wee Longway. He drops down with Young Dolph and Pee Wee Longway. 2014, Chief Keef album. And then, like, he does ones with Zaytoven, Future, and Honorable C Note in 2016, but, like, they're all kind of established. And then 2016, also, he has one with Lil Uzi Vert. He has huge influences on early careers of, like, Nicki Minaj, 2 Chainz, French Montana, Mike Will Made It, Playboi Carti, Chief Keef, Travis Scott, Fetty Wap, and 21 Savage have all said that he was huge influences on how they made music. And, like, I don't know. It's just kind of crazy whenever, like, how much it all, like, comes. You look at that. They're, like, probably 10 of the 15 biggest artists in music have all had huge influences at, like, the hands of Gucci. And, I mean, really took Lil Wayne's mixtape thing. Like, Lil Wayne was dropping 3 mixtapes a year. Gucci Mane pumped that up to like 8. is insane.
Gucci Mane really is like, along with Lil Wayne, like really responsible for like that huge like mixtape boom for like,
yeah,
in like the early 2000s, mid 2000s. Like,
I would say the Southern scene boom as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like,
Mark said, like all these artists he's putting up, they've become huge and they're all Southern for the most part, you know?
And to be fair, like, Gucci Mane did say that he got the mixtape idea from Lil Wayne, but he had early influences on like Ray Shremmerd, OG Macko. I have a list here: Kodak Black, Lil Yachty, McConan. I get it, didn't work out. Rich the Kid, like
a lot of people.
Yeah, Salsa on the Beat, Fat Boy, Drummer Boy. I think it got pretty much everyone else. OJ the Juice Man. Like, I don't know. Those are a lot. Like, I just named like 30 rappers and like 20 of them are relevant.
Yeah.
All the biggest producers in trap music, pretty much. Like,
yeah. No, like, Gucci Mane is definitely like one of the biggest influences on rap that, like, I feel like a lot of mainstream people don't really realize over, like, since like the early 2000s. Like, just like his, it's just because he's mostly stayed, like, as an underground rapper for a large portion of that. Like, he really is only really jumped up into, like, the mainstream, like, over the past, like, couple years, I feel like. I mean, especially since he's gotten out of jail, because he's released, like, I feel like 10 albums since he's came out of jail.
It's really been, like, 5 or 6.
Which seems impossible, but... No, yeah, like I said, I really did have him... I really do have him written down as one of the... on my short list, but I was like... I don't know if I'll mention him at first, because one, I kind of figured you were going to, and but no, yeah, I agree though.
Yeah, but like, even if you look at like from a like lyrical perspective, Lil Wayne, like, if your idea of like lyricism is less based in storytelling and more based in like how many metaphors, similes, like alliteration, how many rhymes, Lil Wayne is like the pinnacle of that. He is like perfection, like. No one else is going to touch him. And Gucci Mane's clever. Gucci Mane's got some wordplay, but he also doesn't take himself incredibly seriously. There are jokes in his music. He's still a decent storyteller. And like I say, he's pretty clever. But like, I think his lyricism is way more indicative of where music has been in the last 5 or so years than Lil Wayne's is. Which I think is like also more of a credit to him than Lil Wayne in terms of influence.
Yeah. No, yeah, nah. I do agree. He's definitely at least in the conversation.
He's number one.
At least.
I would unquestionably, like, as far if we look at what the current scene is for hip hop music, he's unquestionably the biggest influence.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So see there, Mark?
Yeah, no, it really is kinda hard to find an argument against Gucci, which kinda sounds crazy when you say it out loud, but like Gucci Mane is like, because, like you said, he doesn't really take himself super seriously, so it feels like he shouldn't be. But it's
man's got an ice cream cone on his face.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you just really feel like, okay, this guy shouldn't be actually important in anything, but like he weirdly like is, and I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Like Marshall said though, especially if you're looking at it to like exclusively to what like hip hop looks like now.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gucci Mane is pretty much, like you said, like unquestionably
it's unquestionably
one of the most influential dudes.
Yeah.
I think like, you know, who was Gucci influenced by? Probably like UGK and Outkast. So like, are they more influential because they influenced him?
Yeah, see, that was
other people. Like, it's different tastes. Yeah, see, that's, like, influence spans multiple generations of rap.
Yeah, that's what kind of made it occur. Because I was like, when I was talking about like Jay-Z, and it's like, obviously Jay-Z was like largely influenced by Biggie. So it's like, well, do I give more credit to Biggie for influencing Jay-Z or Jay-Z because, you know, he's like a large influence? And it's like, do I want to run it all the way back and be like, Run DMC, because they were like the first, like,
Grandmaster Flash.
Like Run DMC was like the first, like, group or like artists in general to like make hip hop like a mainstream thing, like, especially once they made that Walk This Way remix with Aerosmith, like that kind of like a legitimate genre. So it's like, is Run DMC get credit for, like, you know, making hip hop like a mainstream ish type of thing? And it's like, I don't know, but yeah, the influence thing is definitely kind of hard to pinpoint it exactly, because, like you said, everybody's just influenced by other people that came before them.
No, I think we should do most influential to the current state of rap.
Yeah.
So and I think I agree with Mark in terms of, I would probably have it down to those three as far as Kanye, Lil Wayne, and Gucci. I would honestly, after your argument there, Mark, I would lean Gucci. Are you okay with that decision?
Let's go.
No, yeah, I mean, I'm really fine with that. Like, I definitely agree on the top three, probably on today's music scene, being Lil Wayne, Gucci, and Kanye. Like, I really do think that that's almost kind of undisputable, mm-hmm. that those are like three of the most important people in hip hop music.
I think you could argue like Drake over Kanye. I think I could see that argument.
I really don't think, like, so Drake's obviously like wildly important and he like changes a lot of shit, but like, outside of Bryson Tiller, who's tried to become, like, basically one part, he's tried to become just Drake's R&B. Like, how many artists can you really say that Drake is, like, how many artists do you really see that? Because the game really changed in, like, 2012, 2013 to the opposite direction of where Drake really is going. So, like,
he's definitely, like you said, he's really important to the genre, but I don't know how overly influential necessarily.
Right.
He is.
I would say, if you're thinking of influence as far as like getting people into the rap game or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
You're right. But as far as like influence on like the way modern hip hop sounds, I think a lot of that can be traced back to what Drake was doing, you know, 6-7 years ago.
I mean, definitely a lot of things with like the layered drums, the setup of the albums, like actually having interludes on your albums, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, having like Timbaland type beats that were made for probably like someone like Aaliyah on his albums. Like, you can trace that all pretty much back to, I guess you should probably give like 40 credit for that if we're being technical. But you can really trace that back to So Far Gone. But ultimately, I kind of think Kanye is the most important for like changing production. I think Lil Wayne is most important for changing the overall sound. And I think Gucci Mane is the most responsible for like individual artists.
I think I
agree with that. I think that's a good way of dividing it up.
I do. I agree with that. I actually like that. I think that makes sense.
That's basically where my split came down to, and I don't know how to quantify that exactly, like which is the most important. I kind of picked Gucci Mane just because of like how many like relevant artists today that he collaborated with before they were a big deal. Because like maybe we never get Migos or Young Thug or even like Future without Gucci Mane. Maybe we never get Mike Will Mated or Zaytoven or Honorable C Note or Southside on the Beat or like Metro Boomin without him. Like, how different would rap music be if we even didn't have like a couple of those guys?
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, especially like when you say you're talking about like, I mean, Metro Boomin is like the biggest producer in the game right now. You know, Future and Young Thug are obviously like huge deals.
And he even worked Migos, with like,
Migos is a huge deal these days. So it's like, I mean,
he worked with 2 Chainz a lot too. He got like,
oh yeah,
and Chief Keef, Waka Flocka.
Chief Keef,
people don't really.
He got some Midwest roots too.
But like, he's had like a huge. He's just had like a shit ton of pop. Even Lil Uzi Vert. Like, I mean, I get we might not like some of these artists on this list. But like, I think
they're relevant. They're definitely relevant. Like,
I mean, 21 Savage pretty much said that like his rap style is largely derived from Gucci Mane. Travis Scott said like he was one of the most important artists that like he considers in his influences. Like, there are just so many of them.
Yeah,
even the ones that like Gucci Mane indirectly influenced, like we would say Lil Wayne or Kanye did. Like, you have all the artists he actually changed and that, or like helped build, and then you have all the ones that were influenced by him on top of that, which is just like an astounding number.
Yeah.
Plus, if you look at all the people who were wearing free Goo Up t-shirts when he was in jail, I would actually say it's more common to find a rapper that didn't wear a free Goo Up t-shirt than one who did.
Yeah. So are we giving most of the influential credit to Gucci Mane or Gucci Mane's clone that's now walking around? No, but I'm kidding. All right, we should probably wrap this up here because we've been going for a while. So, all right,
yeah.
All right,
it's a good discussion.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, this was the Deceptively Athletic podcast. You can follow us all on Twitter. I am at Tony Romanello. Mark, you are
at Waka Flocka Twain.
Marshall, you are.
Oh man, I think it's at Marshall_Law7. I think so.
I do believe that's right. That. And Greg, you're just what? You're just at Greg Stefanik.
Greg Stefanik. Right?
Way to be easy, Greg.
Oh shit, I thought Greg just kind of dipped on us.
No, he just kind of chilled for that whole entire last like 20 minutes.
All right. Well, that's going to be me during TV next week, basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Watch the Twin Peaks pilot. That's what I want to talk about. You guys should all see. Just watch the pilot. All
right.
I'll be caught up on Johnny Versace. And
all right, cool.
I'll watch the Twin Peaks pilot for next week.
Yeah.
But
all
right. I don't get too analytical with my TV. I just kind of like, I just kind of watch it. And then when other people have smart things to say, I'm like, you know what?
That.
I'm going to say that to someone else later so I sound smart.
Yeah.
So,
yo, are we doing Oscar takes though?
When are we doing those?
Oh, I'm.
We should. That's in March, okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah, see,
it's a month from now. All
right, I need to start watching. I
need to see more. I've only seen two of the Best Picture nominees, so I need to.
I need to get it together.
Yeah.
So. You've seen seven of them?
I'll
need to watch them.
Jeez, dude.
You're right. We should have an Oscar podcast.
I think I watched six. Yeah.
I've only seen
just try to watch the
Mason. I've only seen Dunkirk.
We got like a month.
Yeah, that. I've only seen Dunkirk and Get Out, so I'll have to.
I've literally only seen Get Out.
I've
only seen Dunkirk, so there we go.
I've seen six, and Get Out is by far the best. So you guys are good.
All right. Well,
I need to watch it then. Damn.
All right. Well, that'll be it for this episode. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, which would be dope. Leave us a rating, review us, do all that fancy stuff. So, for everybody here, see ya.